Around the NFL Podcast. Turn down $100 million for its exclusive podcast rights.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, coming to you from a virtual room filled with some heroes. Mark Sessler, Greg Rosenthal, what is up, boys? Flagship show.
Big show. Big week. Great early games. But I do want to say before we move on, if anyone's listening that wants to pay us even a fraction of that sort of money, like, come at us with an offer, because that was untrue what Matt
right.
Smith said.
We might very quickly agree to a far truncated deal
very
to what
available.
Was just announced. Yes.
It's all about leverage. We have zero leverage right now. What we're looking for is leverage. Ha ha ha. Funny. Yes, week 7, Sunday, in the books, and bit of a wild Sunday. Some surprising outcomes, some blowouts in the late portion of the Sunday schedule, but we are down to 2 undefeated teams now, 1 winless team, unfortunately a team that I identify with very closely, and some interesting football to go over. Greg, what did you think of today's football?
I mean, when you can assign yourself Washington versus Dallas and Detroit, Atlanta early, it's like you've got your finger on the pulse of what's happening in the NFL.
I mean, that's you did that intentionally, Greg.
No,
you
I did. I enjoyed him.
I enjoyed it. That.
I did. I made a trade with Shook, who's going to come on later. But no, it was a fun day.
It's like Greg? when the Jets gave the Colts 77 second round picks for Sam Darnold. You know, sometimes
Greg,
you know,
texted me on after our network show, saying I would really like to switch.
I didn't want to watch
Shook.
The Saints game. I don't know why. I just wanted to watch.
He suggested that he switch with Shook, and I said absolutely, like, reach out to Shook and do the legwork. And then he's like, well, now actually, I don't think I want to do that. I'm overthinking it. And then we never spoke again. And then he tells me this morning that, you know, the backwater channels were abuzz as Greg is trading with Shook games without any of
I changed my mind again. You know, sometimes
you guys
you
go,
your
like,
mind.
More in detail
right.
on
I
how
know.
You chose
Mark,
these games.
Mark,
like,
Mark kept it going. I had already gone
I,
too long.
Just,
edit,
I can't.
Edit it out. Edit
no,
it out.
This I'm not touching it.
Oh, right no, this me? Is gold, Greg. Yeah. This is podcast.
Remember when the you know, our analytics expert here, I'm not going to even name him because I'm kind of mocking it here now, is like, you know, make sure no matter what you do, it's like the first 5 minutes of the show, don't lose them with some jibber jabber. Like, get right into the big stuff. That's when you lose that audience.
Mission accomplished.
Bye.
Hey, whenever we have like 13 games to talk about, if we can just like bury the audience with 7 minutes of jibber jabber, that's what we're going to do. Nick Shook is coming later. He of the big trade win over Rosenthal. So stay tuned for that. But let's get going with, yes, the matchup in Nashville between 2 undefeateds.
It's do or die for the Titans, who have 1 timeout in their pocket. And Guskowski in this range this year as he kicks it on its way. The kick is wide right. It is no good.
All right.
Wow, I can't even hardly believe it.
What a nice Midwestern sound that was. Bill Hillgrove, Tunch Ilkin with a call, WDVE. Hey, listen, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. The Titans badly outplayed the Steelers in the second half on Sunday, but a slow start coupled with the latest high-profile failure by Steven Gostkowski allowed the Steelers to escape with a 27-24 win. Pittsburgh is 6-0 for the first time since 1978 and now stand with the Seahawks as the only remaining undefeated teams in the NFL. Boys, strange game here because it's Steelers win the coin toss. They go on a 9-minute, 18-second drive, ends with a Deontay Johnson touchdown. They get a 3-and-out, Pittsburgh does, get the ball back, score another touchdown. It's 14-zip. They're in complete control. It gets, by the third quarter, it's 27-7. And, you know, my eyes start wandering. I'm saying, oh, what's going on in the NFL? Mark's Browns are having some fun with the Bengals. Like, but then all of a sudden, the Titans start doing the Titan thing, and they get back into the game, and they fall short because Gostkowski can't hit a kick that he's got to hit in that spot. So that's where we're at. The Steelers, to me, as good as they looked in the first half, the second half was a little bit concerning, but listen, you can't take away what they did in those first two quarters. Ben Roethlisberger looked really good in the first half, did not look very good in the second half. James Conner is really doing good things for them this season. I've really been impressed by him so far this year. And the defense was able to make enough stops, even if it wasn't their best effort, to get the W. So the Steelers moved to 6-0. The Titans, they're kicking themselves because they had a golden opportunity here for a huge comeback. And what a comeback that would have been, down 27-7 to the mighty Steelers. It didn't happen. And the reason they lost third downs, Titans were unable to stop the Steelers on third downs. Pittsburgh, 13 of 18 third downs in the game. And they only had the ball for 1 minute and 21 seconds in the first quarter. So keeping the offense off the field was huge for Pittsburgh.
I thought they took, in the first half, Tennessee out of their game. And, you know, this is a team that's played three games in 13 days. And it showed a little bit, I thought, early on here. But we've talked about Big Ben's various troubles on deep shots down the field. But what he's doing very well is carving defenses up mid-range. And I think that this just strikes me as the most complete team in the AFC and maybe in the league because of what they can do on defense. But also, you know, they got one catch from Chase Claypool today. And so in return, you know, Deontay Johnson steps up. You mentioned James Conner. I thought, you know, he's been up and down, but he made big plays for them. And Tennessee, to come back from a 27-7 deficit the way they did, I thought it was impressive. You know, Gostkowski's been a real roller coaster ride, a true adventure, and you got the dip today, the ugly part of that. But to me, Tennessee, this doesn't take the shine off of who they are and what they want to be. They just had a first half where they played uncharacteristically. I mean, I think they had like 30 yards on the ground.
Well, the last 2 weeks for Gostkowski, so that's something that they're going to have to think about. I know he hit a big kick at the end of the game, but he had his struggles last week. I see this as a Steelers defense game. Even in the second half, the fact that you know, they got the ball on a Ben interception, and then the Steelers defense shuts down Tennessee. That was one of six drives. So Tennessee had 10 drives in this game. On six of them, they didn't have a first down. I mean, that I know they scored some points on the other drives, but it's 2020, and the Titans are awesome. They only end up with 15 first downs on the day. If you have six drives where you go three and out or four and out, like some of those drives were, I mean, that's pretty impressive, and you would expect the Steelers to take care of business when they do that.
Yeah, I was really excited to do like a reverse windmill dunk on your Ben Roethlisberger game manager assassination from Thursday's show, Greg, and after the first four
it was
drives.
2 weeks ago. It wasn't. I'm not painting it as negative, as you're saying. I'm just saying that's kind of the style they're playing.
I know, but through four drives against an undefeated Titans team on the road, Pittsburgh had put up 24 points, and Ben was 17 of 24 for 160 and two touchdowns.
But were those deep shots, or were they the pew, pew, pew to Dante Johnson, you know?
I think short and mid-range shots, yes. Yeah. So that's kind of his game, which I guess is to your point of the Big Breeze moniker that you've tagged him with as well. The rest of the game after those first four drives, 3 points, 15 to 25, three interceptions. The first pick was just, you know, he threw it up for grabs at the end of the first half, but the last two were definitely on him. Although the third pick, the one that set up the Titans to nearly tie the game, was Juju Smith-Schuster in coverage against the linebacker, you know, running a route against the linebacker, couldn't get any separation. I don't know what's going on with Juju. Is he just not a guy that separates? I don't know. But Ben put it in a really good spot. But Juju, the coverage was so tight that he couldn't like hold on to the ball, and it got knocked out of his hands and then picked off on the deflection. So nice win for the Steelers, but also, you know, the shot of Big Ben on the sideline after Gostkowski went wide right was one of, oh, we got away with one here. Because that could have been a killer loss, but they escape it, and man, they're looking good. I think we're going to get to the Bucs in a bit, Mark. That's my pick for the most balanced team in the league right now.
Yeah, me too.
But the Steelers, when things are clicking right as they were early in this game, it is a reminder that their top gear is pretty much ahead of everybody else, I think, in the AFC. Maybe the Chiefs have something to say about that. Let's move on.
Kareem Hunt in the backfield. Two receivers left, one right. Mayfield back to pass. Looks, going towards the end zone, and it's caught by Donovan Peoples-Jones. Touchdown! He got it! He got it! The rookie from Michigan got it with 11 seconds left to go!
A back shoulder throw. Unbelievable catch. Unbelievable throw.
Jim Donovan and Doug Deacon, WKRK. I can't believe Donovan Peoples-Jones is a real name. Like, I'm thrilled that there's a person that goes by that name. It's like that old Key and Peele sketch. Like, that's what that name sounds like. But he made a name for himself today. Baker Mayfield hits Donovan Peoples-Jones. Also a name you always have to say the full name because it's so wild. With 11 seconds to play, sealing a wild 35-31 win over the Bengals. This also featured, after that play, a Hail Mary that very nearly completed that would have been a fitting way to a wild game. Mark, per the Elias Sports Bureau, this is the first game in NFL history with five go-ahead touchdown passes in the fourth quarter by the two teams. Mark, the cardiac kids are back.
Yeah, it's It was a game of two. It was two sides of a coin for Cleveland, because Baker Mayfield, you know, and he has had his troubles in the last couple contests. We know that. Started 0-for-5, and for the second game in a row, threw an interception on the first play, and that brought more news, because on that play, Odell Beckham, one of the reasons Donovan Peoples-Jones was, you know, in there at the end was that Odell Beckham went down with a knee injury that Ian Rappaport has put a tweet out saying he'll get an MRI, but the concern is that it's very serious, and I think we usually know how those go when we get those Sunday reports. He was out of the game immediately. Baker, when he missed his fifth pass, I tweeted out, because at that point Joe Burrow looked lights out, and we've been seeing it week after week, that is Cleveland okay with having the fourth best quarterback in the AFC North?
You've been jumping ship like crazy the last week or so.
I'm not really jumping ship. Just look at the other quarterbacks in the division. I mean, I don't think he's the equal of Joe Burrow, but perhaps psychically to lash me and to shut me up, he completed 21 passes in a row to finish the game before spiking the ball at the end. And he looked good. He looked good throwing the ball, I thought, today. He made some money throws. And on that final drive, what to me looked like growth was they had no timeouts. And he had to go, you know, near length of the field with no timeouts. And it wouldn't have happened without some insane catches along the way. You know, Rashad Higgins, who has shown chemistry with Baker Mayfield 2 years ago, then last year was out of the loop, seemed to be in the doghouse with the coaches, has come on again, and he's a big part of that passing attack, and he's going to need to be. They're going to be without Odell Beckham. I wanted to see what would happen with a thin receiving core once he went down, and I thought they showed perhaps more chemistry than they have through the air in really any other game. I don't know what that means. I'd want to go watch that again. But another Harrison Bryant, and today is, I just found this out today, one of the more absurd holidays that seems completely created out of thin air. It's tight end day, apparently.
It is created out of thin air. George Kittle made it up. So it's
tell me it's for a charity, because I stomached it today because I was like, oh, it must be for a cause. But if it wasn't for a cause, I am furious.
Yeah.
Kittle came up with it last year, and I think they ran with it.
If it's for a cause, I mean, if it's for, you know, George Kittle's personal enjoyment, that's
going to be my cause of death is what it is.
Right. To celebrate such a day, Harrison Bryant, the rookie who we've talked about on the show before, who looks legit. Two touchdowns. Austin Hooper was out with appendicitis. David Njoku caught a pass. Touchdown pass. You have to wonder if it's the last action he will get in Cleveland. He's on the trade block. I can't say enough about Joe Burrow. I just thought that there was one play that really, it was 3rd and 11, and Joe Burrow took off on a run, and it just, like, Cleveland's defense is a disaster, and defended it poorly, and he ran for a first down, but he made throws all over the field, and their offensive line was banged up too. At one point, Jonah Williams went out with a neck injury. Trey Hopkins, their center, was out, and it showed. I mean, they had issues, and Burrow, like he does week after week, made plays. So I think it's fair still to say that Baker Mayfield in a very good division is the quarterback looking up at the rest of these, but this was sort of a...
Can't even enjoy it.
Well, Well, it's different.
Not today, though, Mark. Not today.
If it's Thursday night football and, like, I am able just to go, you know, sit and do... I mistakenly thought that I was covering Pittsburgh, Tennessee, and was tracking that heavily the entire time, taking all these notes. And I'm discovering...
I hate when that happens.
2 minutes into the show that I completely botched that, and I had made a mistake. But anyways, I give Cleveland credit for being 5-2.
Wait, you figured it out in the middle of this show?
I figured it out 4 minutes ago when your intro, like, to that game went on and on. I thought, is Dan tossing this to me? I was a communication issue this morning that I read incorrectly. That's another. It's another deep dive that I like to take us down in how our show is produced. But I will. I will stop there. 5-2, but what gets on my radar are teams that have a clear ceiling, and I think Cleveland. This is good progress. But they're not 5-2 the same way that I look at other 5-2 teams we've encountered.
But they could be different. You know, all these teams are going to be different in December. I still really believe that. And so you want to be 5-2 with a chance to be different and hopefully better in December with Myles Garrett potentially trying to get a Defensive Player of the Year award in December. Every game, like, one of the first things I do, check the Browns box score, and I'm looking forward to watching this one. It's like, okay, did Myles Garrett get his forced fumble today? It's like, yep,
yes, he
got it, and he got two sacks and another tackle for loss. And in these games where there's not a lot of defense and the Browns don't have a lot of defense, a lot of times it comes down to, do you have a guy that can make one or two plays? And Garrett kind of makes one or two huge plays every week, which is pretty awesome.
Yep. And not to belabor this point, but when we had our discussion about the importance of sacks and getting to the quarterbacks, and it was deemed that Jadeveon Clowney doesn't need to get sacks, and by the way, he still has zero sacks this season.
Well, he's struggling. He's not even getting his hurries this year.
Listen, Myles Garrett is an example why you could say stats is an overrated stat or something, but that guy changes games because he gets to the quarterback and he knocks the ball loose. He's a big-time player. You know what the Browns strike me as, Mark? I see what you're saying with the ceiling. But to me, they feel like a 9-7 team. Maybe a bounce goes their way, and they go 10-6, and they're playing in January in the playoffs, and they're giving someone a hard time on the road. Like, you're right. Signing up for that in a second, right?
Absolutely. So I'm not trying to be, like, you know, covertly down on the whole situation. I just am trying to view them the same way that I'd view other teams.
Go beat a really good team. That's the next test for them. But good job getting off the mat after last week. Let's move on. Ricky's not sitting at her desk. Erica?
Where we live.
Maybe she lost her connection.
Now she sat down. Now she got up again.
Oh, she's had the connection?
Ricky?
We should keep all this in.
Ricky! Come back to us, Ricky. What's happening?
So, you see that guy that just walked behind my window? He moved in next door. I'm not sure, but he knocked on the door with the pizza, and he was like, he kind of speaks broken English. He's like, can you cut the pizza for me? Because I don't have anything. And I was like, oh, I can give you a knife quick. And then he just asked, like, what are you doing tonight? Like, what? And I just gave him, like, a freaking butcher knife, and I'm home alone. And
what are you doing?
I don't know. He just knocked on my door and asked me to cut his pizza. Like, what am I supposed to?
A strange man,
it's
Erica.
An odd thing to give him,
Erica. When a strange man knocks on your door and you're home alone, and he asks for something to cut with, you don't get your biggest knife from the kitchen and give it to him. This is like, survival skills 101.
A pizza roller.
What could you have done? Not answer the door. That would be an option during a live show.
He's like literally knocking on my thing, and I'm like, and then he's like, can you cut my pizza? And then he just asked, when are you going to be done? Like,
right,
your show.
Let's keep the show moving. Let's close the curtains behind you because he has a free view.
Oh my!
For whatever he's.
All right, where are we? Let's move on.
Let's move on.
Alert, 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 or maybe Oscar is the call on 1st and 10. Jeff Wilson Jr. back in, takes the wide run right, breaks a tackle, 10-5, touchdown, San Francisco!
And that feels great, baby!
Greg Papa, Tim Ryan with the call, deadbolt that door, Ricky Hollywood, Jeff Wilson Jr. ran for a 114, 3 touchdowns. Cam Newton threw 3 picks before being benched for Jared Stidham in the second half. The 49ers cruise to a 33-6 win over the Patriots. New England falls to 2-4 in what was the most lopsided home loss of the Bill Belichick era. Greg, after the game, the hooded one said that Cam Newton, quote, absolutely, close quote, will remain his starter. Should it be so definite?
Yes, because when Jared Stidham has played this year, he has not looked any better, including in the cameo in this game. I know it wasn't a lot of tape, and I just think this ceiling for this team, especially offensively, you know, is not too high, but it's higher with Cam Newton getting out of this crazy funk that he's in. You have to give the 49ers defense credit, but Cam is as streaky a quarterback as I've ever seen throwing the ball. I think that's been true his entire career. And he came out and you could just tell right away, like, he was off. Like, he was missing guys. He's been holding the ball a ton the last 2 weeks, not seeing things clearly. And then when he does pull the trigger, it's like his interception was just, you could almost see his mind like saying, oh, should I throw this or not? Interception, missing receivers, like, that was all bad, and it wouldn't have mattered. Like, he could have been the best Cam Newton today, and the Patriots defense was never gonna get enough stops for them to compete in this game. They were very lucky to be only down 23-3 at halftime. It was as one-sided varsity JV as any half, I would say, of any two teams all year. The 49ers had 18 first downs at halftime, and the Patriots had 15 plays. And it's a reminder, Kyle Shanahan, not saying that, like, he's a better head coach than Bill Belichick, but if I would rather have an offensive head coach that can cook up magic with a whole bunch of craziness and injuries rather than a defensive coach with a game, you know, with who can manage a game and have certain things but has a team with clear flaws. Because Kyle Shanahan can still have these game plans where Jimmy G made a couple nice plays early, didn't have to really do much, and it's a coaching game. And well, their coaching was better.
From a different perspective, along similar lines, maybe Kyle Shanahan has a better GM than Bill Belichick, whose GM is Bill Belichick, because it feels like to me that the chickens are coming home to roost here with a roster that's talent deficient and a quarterback that is, at this stage of his career, hot and cold. And there's going to be games like this when a team comes in that has more talent than you, that's well coached, that the Patriots maybe aren't special anymore. And the fact that these games can happen for a team that no longer has a legendary quarterback behind center to clean up the mess, that no longer has can beat you one-on-one on offense, that the defense isn't special like it was for long stretches last year. I wasn't, like, watching the... I guess you're supposed to be, like, Mark, let me know if you agree. I think you're supposed to be, like, watching the Patriots getting whipped in Foxborough and be like, I can't believe this is happening. This is so weird. But none of it felt surprising to me, so I didn't, like, take any, like... miserable Jet fan joy out of it, because it just made sense. The Patriots aren't very good.
Well, it doesn't seem like it should surprise anyone who watched the Broncos-Patriots game with the same cast of characters and Julian Edelman in time for Halloween becoming a complete ghost in an offense that has no direction. And you are making a fair point on the GM side of things that a lot of this were systemic issues a year ago for New England. You just had Tom Brady masking over things that I think someone like Cam Newton in a huge funk could not. The defense masked over a lot of that last year. So if the defense falls through the floor, I mean, you got nothing to save you. And, you know, it's like Kyle Shanahan, where I'd agree with you, Greg, is that he's faced Belichick four times and put up an average of 30 points on him. And right, that came with guys like Matt Schaub.
By the way, he had him in the Super Bowl too. You can say whatever you want about how that game ended. They put up 30, you know, they put up enough points to win that game.
I mean, we knew it would be a great duel between, I think, two coaches that have, like, immense respect for each other, but the 49ers have more parts right now. They're pretty broken themselves. I mean, the minute Jeff Wilson comes in and does a very Shanahan-esque thing by running for 112 yards and three touchdowns, bang, he's being taken off on a cart. They can't get healthy, but I would look at the Niners overall globally and say they've had a lot, you know, maybe west of the Eagles, their injury issues have been second to none, and they're winning games. I mean, they took care of the Rams. They absolutely decimated the Patriots today. That makes you think when they get healthy, when that time comes, even with Jimmy G looking quite average to me at best, I still give them a chance to sneak into the wild card.
I do too, because I mean, look, they've put it on some teams. But they lost Deebo Samuel at the end of this game in a blowout. It was a tough spot. I don't know how serious that was. And you lost Wilson. And the reserves on defense, like Sherman and D Ford and some of the bigger name guys, they're coaching through it, but they're probably not back for another month. It's amazing what they've done. I also think they're a terrible matchup for the Patriots because that the Patriots can't stop the run, and that's how Belichick's defenses normally start. They're so slow at linebacker. I mean, Bentley and Jennings, who's this rookie, like the outside zone, like they're set up to stop some passing teams. And so I think the Bills next week, like that's sort of the Patriots' last stand in this division. They're set up to possibly stop some passing teams, but they cannot stop the run. And the 49ers just run it so well. The Patriots, by the way, also lost Joe Tooney, their center in this game. N'Keal Harry had a concussion. You mentioned Edelman was in and out. He's been so slow and injured this year. He had two throws to him today. Both of those throws were intercepted.
So the Niners are now 4-3, and you just it's incredible how quickly things have changed for them because, you know, they were coming off the 25-20 loss to the Eagles in primetime, tough loss. Then you get blown out 43-17. Jimmy G gets benched, and there's just like panic in the streets about the 49ers with the schedule up ahead. Then they beat the Rams and the Patriots on the road. What lies ahead, and we'll dig into this more as the week goes along, but at Seattle, home Packers, at Saints, at Rams, home Bills, all coming up now. So they're not out of the woods by any stretch, and at 4-3, they're very vulnerable to get knocked kind of out of this wild card race.
And Jimmy G looked a lot better today. I know they're two picks. One of them was just, you know, at the end of the half. But he did make three or four throws, including on third and long. He looked like he was moving better. He looked like Jimmy G kind of from 2019 today. So they're going to need that because they're so banged up. But, man, they're so talented, even despite all the losses. You're right. I mean, the Patriots have no players with juice that are just going to win one-on-one.
Let's bring in Ricky. I want to hear Ricky on this.
The 49ers still do.
Ricky, you
she's
are
still available to us.
You're a 20. Yeah, you're still around. Good. That's a good sign.
Now.
We're going to check in on you periodically. Just like, what do they call those? Well-being checks?
Yeah.
Like that. You are in your, you know, mid to late 20s. Lady never tells.
Right.
So you've never known anything as a Patriots fan like this. How are you doing right now?
You know, as perfectly stated in the best football film of our generation by Coach Boone in Remember the Titans, we'll be perfect in every aspect. You drop a pass, you run a mile. You miss a blocking assignment, you run a mile. You make a fumble, I'll break my foot off in your John Brown hind parts, and then you will run a mile. Perfection. Well, you guys, the Patriots will be running mile after mile today.
What's happening?
Okay. Oh, I thought Dan set that up or something. I
wanted to give her the floor. Hey, speaking of the demise of the Patriots dynasty, what did Zolak have to say when they pulled Newton out of the game?
Meanwhile, off the sideline for the Patriots, in comes number 4 in the blue jersey, Jarrett Stidham.
Quarter too late. So no helmet, no earpiece on for Cam Newton. How's he know what play it is?
Oh, boy. Ouch. Oh, a hit piece on Cam from Zolak.
Well, Zolak.
It is becoming very clear, though, that Patriots fans who have listened to this show for 7-8 years are heading into complete darkness. If they're going to be dressed up this way every time they stumble, it's going to be a long ride for those listeners.
How did Zolak get from here?
I love Tom Brady.
To here.
Quarter too late. So no helmet, no earpiece on for Cam Newton. How's he know what play it is?
Hate to hear it. How does he know? Cam totally checked out. All right, listen, this is all I have. Let's move on.
Brady drops.
Got the Yankees.
Protection. Throws the deep ball toward the corner. Scotty Miller in. He's got the ball. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Touchdown, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Scotty Miller. Great throw by Brady.
Oh, Tom Brady, that guy. Tom Brady. Kicked him out the door. Gene Deckerhoff with the call. That was one of the prettiest touchdown passes you'll see all year. The Brady to Scotty Miller corner end zone pass. Tom Brady threw four touchdown passes, moving him ahead of Drew Brees for number one on the all-time TD throw list for the time being. As the Bucs battled, then pulled away from the Raiders, 45-20. Sizzler, watching Brady today, he looked vintage. He looked like a master of his craft. The Bucs might be the best team in the league if he's this guy.
I would agree. I mean, we can argue about the most complete team, and I hear you with Tampa Bay. I'd give it to Pittsburgh in the AFC. But one thing that we were always waiting for with Brady and the Bucs offense was, it was clear that in the first couple weeks that there were issues. Were they going to overcome them, or was that just who they were? Well, they're overcoming them, and you just feel this operation heating up. And I think you could see it in the eyes of Tom Brady. You could see it in the eyes of Bruce Arians, who at one point came over and just put an arm around his quarterback. I mean, Bruce Arians is having fun. I think I mentioned last year that I thought he seemed like he had a bit of a 1,000-yard stare, didn't necessarily want to be involved with what he was doing. That's not the case now. And I mean, this is a game where Mike Evans.
I never bought into that one. You're pushing that one.
No one believed that except you.
There were, you know what? That's fine. It is absolutely, I'm not claiming that was a home run take.
Isn't
but
it
I
weird
saw,
that he was a color guy for Fox for a season?
Well, he didn't seem to be having much fun doing that.
He seemed checked out for that.
That was a checkout. So maybe I was continuing it off of that. But this was a game where Mike Evans was essentially not a factor until the game was out of hand. And it just didn't matter. And it makes me wonder, there are the reports out there. They're adding Antonio Brown, and there are a variety of responses to that move. But it's like, okay, let's see how you can squeeze Antonio Brown into an offense where Rob Gronkowski's starting to look better and better every week. Scotty Miller is becoming exactly what you thought he might be with Tom Brady. Chris Godwin was all over the place today. They get just enough from their ground game when they need to. Their offensive line is playing well. Tom Brady is throwing the ball as well as he has in years. In a game like today when he was totally dialed in, I actually have to give the Raiders credit for hanging around, and they really did hang around in this game. There was a back-breaking moment for Derek Carr, and it was they were at this point down, I think it was 24-20 or so, but Carr got picked by Antoine Winfield Jr., who is becoming an awesome safety in the NFL, and that basically ended it because that set up a quick short drive for the Bucs and Ronald Jones to pop him in for a touchdown. That was two touchdowns in 42 seconds. The Raiders were broken at that point. And I watched this Bucs team, guys like Devin White on defense, who had three sacks, who had a play where he saw a ball handler like 17 yards away and just single-handedly sprinted at him and knocked him down. I mean, he blew up Derek Carr in a play where I thought Derek Carr got hurt. It was one of the better games in the second half by Devin White that I've seen a defender play all year. It was very impressive. So they are extremely complete. There's not an overt weakness, and you just have to look at the offense. And I know that I got for the way I phrased it, saying that they would score 40 points on the reg, but I would just say that you see it now. They can do it. Right. They are that attack in every way.
Well, they haven't been totally healthy. Now, getting Godwin back is key. To me, he's the second most valuable player on that offense, and they're different. And now they add Antonio Brown. I don't think they need Antonio Brown. I think. Listening to Bruce Arians have to answer the question that if Antonio Brown did what he's accused of doing, which, to be clear, is sexual assault and rape, then the legal system will take care of that and he won't be on the team. And I don't like him being added to this mix right now and Arians answering questions like that after this game, because I think it's unnecessary. My debrief column last week with the Bucs saying like this team can win the Super Bowl. I mean, I think that's an obvious take. I think they're the best team in the NFL. I'm not. I didn't need to see much more out of Brady with a good offensive line and the high quality of throws he's been making. Like, he just needs to be a top 10 to 12 type of quarterback. They could be even better than that as an offense, I think, if they do their best. But with this kind of line and with this kind of defense and with this kind of depth of playmakers, to me, they are the team. If I had to pick one out of the NFC, they would be my team.
Yeah, and you saw what they did in the final three quarters against the Packers last week when they put it all together and just blew out a very good Green Bay team. And this game to me, and I know he hasn't been, this isn't 2007 Tom Brady or anything. I mean, he's not going to throw 50 touchdowns, but the way he played today was just, to me, and I'll again mention the Scotty Miller touchdown pass. I mean, just the way he's moving the pocket, the confidence he's playing with, the accuracy that he's throwing the ball with, the zip that he's throwing the ball with, he's playing unbelievable. And, you know, with the Antonio Brown situation, there's the component of it with the off-the-field issues and the criminal behavior, alleged criminal behavior, which is messy, and that's a separate conversation. But I think in terms of team building, it's a no-brainer in terms of building your roster out. I know they have three really good wide receivers in Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Scotty Miller. But Miller's been banged up. Godwin's missed time. Evans hasn't been healthy. You never know how this sport works. It's a war of attrition. So if you get Antonio Brown in the mix and he is on the field and making plays, he's going to, I think, make this offense better. I understand why they did it from a team-building standpoint, but it's obviously fair to get on them for some of the moral implications of bringing on a player like Brown.
I would also note that Arians, after the game, was said that the decision to bring on Antonio Brown, he said Tom had nothing to do with this. Now, I don't know if I buy a word of that.
I mean,
but
follow the trail. This has happened twice now in 2 years.
He like admits how much he lies to the media. He says it's a good thing. I don't know. He's not getting paid much, Antonio Brown. He's getting paid the minimum with a little bit of incentive. So they, like the Patriots a year ago, there's very little risk in terms of finances, and you could cut him as quickly as you wanted to if you felt like it. But I'm telling, I mean, we're talking a lot, and I want to see them do it against a good defense. I mean, you said we're not that surprised about the Patriots. Well, when they put 36 on the Raiders, we thought their offense might be pretty good this year. Everyone puts 36.
Look at the Seahawks game.
Right.
Everyone's just falling apart.
My point is everyone puts points on the Raiders. So that's a huge part of today's equation. It's not taking anything away. It's just saying that I like this Raiders team, but their defense is maybe the worst in the NFL. It's certainly one of the three or four worst. And that's why it was so crazy for Erica to go in a lock-off against me in this one. And Tom Brady, how do you go against Tom Brady right now, Erica? I mean, you come at the king, best not miss.
Yeah. I mean, it was a long game. Did you guys see my storybook for Gruden and that whole thing? And I just...
Yes.
I went with it, and I lost really hard.
One and six right now? With the one win being anti-Jets?
Dan, I think you're muted.
You were frozen there for a second. Are you back? Hold on.
Tough sitch there, Ricky. Tough sitch. Yeah. One thing I want to get on, and I want to check in her welfare check. She's okay. Good.
Yep.
I just wanted, before we move on, get on the Raiders and John Gruden. Hated, 4th-and-1 at the Tampa Bay 17-yard line, 12:43 to play. In the fourth quarter, they kick a field goal to cut it.
Doing it all year.
To cut
know
it.
Your team.
I mean, to
all year.
To cut it. It was a 24-17 game. They were down a touchdown. To cut it to 24-20, as if this was a team that was going to get multiple stops on a locked-in Tom Brady with his supporting cast. This is what happened after that. Kansas City got the ball back. 11 plays, 67 yards, touchdown. Next drive for the Raiders, interception on the first play. Following drive for Kansas City, 2 plays, 24 yards, touchdown. Followed by a 4-and-out by the Raiders, followed by 6 plays, 32 yards, touchdown. It went from 24-20 to 45-20. Congratulations on your field goal.
Well, they I will say they were hanging in there and trying to, you know, not completely go haywire on offense.
Done it all year, though. It's three times.
I mentioned that pick, too, and
that
they scored two
thing.
Touchdowns in 42 seconds. So that was all packed into a crumbling, a huge meltdown.
You play to win the game. Let's move on.
And sidearm pass intercepted. It's Dan Sorensen. A pick six. Dan Sorensen. Dirty Dan Sorensen. As Drew Lock throws a 50-yard pick six.
Dirty Dan Sorensen. How about that? The Chiefs got a 102-yard kickoff return for a touchdown by Byron Pringle, another name I love. A hard-charging TD run by Clyde Edwards-Helaire, a Mahomes to Tyreek TD connection, and yes, Dirty Dan Sorensen with the pick six of Drew Lock added up to a 43-16 win over the Broncos at a frigid and snowy Mile High. Mark, you know, this is a game, again, this is one of the coldest days in the history of Broncos football, which you would never think would happen this time of year, but it was. So that's going to affect the passing game for the second straight week. Kansas City weather elements played a part, I think, in how they were able to attack the opponent. But they were hitting Denver from so many angles that it turned into a blowout, even with a single Mahomes touchdown.
Well, and if you're gonna try to challenge Kansas City, who is not a team that can't operate in cold weather, I mean, it was beautiful to look at the snow. The Broncos were hideous to look at, and you know, this is a game for those of you measuring Drew Lock. And you know, I know a couple close diehard Broncos fans that came away from this one just very concerned about what they have under center. I mean, you have two killer fumbles from Melvin Gordon, two interceptions from Lock, and they never really got untracked. And you know, we saw our first taste of Le'Veon Bell for the Chiefs. I thought he looked pretty good. They didn't use him a ton, but it's just another. We're talking about Antonio Brown. It's another piece to add, and you can question why they're doing it. But to me, it's just like, you know, load up down the stretch. And this game was just not a competition. And I think that the Broncos, for all their parts are great, but you need like the quarterback play to equal it. And it just didn't happen today at all.
Well, it reminds me a little when the 49ers suddenly had all their players back and then they got blown out that first game with the Dolphins. I mean, and the Broncos obviously aren't at the stage of development that the 49ers are. You still got to start playing together a little bit. The offense, you would expect to do more. I'll take the L on this, that I thought the Broncos were going to be in this game. But you have a first half where it's a pick six and a kick return against the Chiefs, forget about it. I mean, that's it. It's over. I mean, the Chiefs were held to like 5.5 yards per play. They didn't have a third down in the game. They didn't convert a third down in the game, and they put up 43 points. Like, they had under 300 yards in this game, the Chiefs. So I think the Broncos defense was up for a challenge, but it's if you're giving away points on special teams and your offense, eventually the defense is going to cave in.
I think it's one of the better defenses around, but it's just you can't be put with you can't right. have that weight put on you dealing with the Chiefs.
Yeah, it was a terrible performance by the Broncos. I still have an open mind with Drew Lock, but we're now 8 starts in and I just don't see anything special there. He's gonna need to improve his play. He wasn't good enough in this game. But at the same time, if you're gonna give Mahomes a pass for not lighting it up in these elements, and let me just give you a little hardcore information on this. Kickoff temperature of 14 degrees. Tied for the 5th coldest game in Broncos history, the 3rd coldest home game in franchise history, and the coldest pre-Halloween home game in franchise history. It sounds like a Jake Gyllenhaal natural disaster film taking part.
Hey, let's hear it for climate change. Way to go. it's racking up the scores this year.
Le'Veon Bell did look pretty good. He had 2 16-yard runs in limited work. He ran 6 times for 39 yards. He had 1 run of 16 yards in 264 carries with the Jets. So I think he tweeted after the game, man, that felt so good. So he's happy to be on a winner. You know, it goes to show you if you complain enough, you could get into a better situation in the modern NFL. Good for him. Yeah, total effort for the Chiefs here, and the Broncos running out of time to write this thing. Let's move on.
To Rodgers, looks, rainbows, right side. He's got his man, Devontae Adams, to the 10, to the 5, right side, to the end zone, cutting it back. Touchdown, Green Bay Packers.
Wayne Larrabee with the call, WTMJ with the call. Aaron Rodgers looked vulnerable last week against the Bucs. He was back to MVP form against the Texans, throwing 4 touchdown passes, 2 to an uncoverable Devontae Adams, 35-20 win in Houston. for the Packers. Mark, Aaron Rodgers looked like Aaron Rodgers again.
Yes, and this is the game that I was supposed to cover, but I did catch many elements of this. And for me, because of coming off of last week, it was one of those games where heat check on the Packers. Are we entering into a place where they're a myth? They aren't what we thought the first 4 weeks. Well, I think they are what we thought they were, because they were dialed in from the beginning with literally no reservations. I mean, in the first half, 250 yards, 9.4 yards per attempt. And, you know, you're playing a Texans team that's been frisky, but the Texans opened with basically three punts, a missed field goal, and then they went to half, where the Packers, like, right out of the gate, a 55-yard drive, an 88-yard drive, both of those taking up 10 and 9 plays, eating up the clock. They score a third touchdown before the half. Game over. And then, you know, their defense has not been special, but that's enough. That's enough to get it done. And so I think what happened last week was, we just talked about the Bucs. You were dealing with one of the two or three super legit defenses, and that's your concern. Can they operate? Can the Packers get to a higher level against that kind of a defense? Well, they'll probably see them again.
Mm. Like, this is a spot where, you know, the Texans are one of the few teams that travel their cornerback, you know, Bradley Roby, with the opposing number one. And then you have him matched up against Davante Adams. He has his struggles. Then he gets hurt, right, and it all falls apart from there. I mean, the Packers defense, this is all they got to do. Force three punts in a row to start a game, you're going to win every one of those games. It's like, you just need the Packers defense to show up, and that half is as good a half, you know, production-wise, as they've had in a long time, the Packers defense. They need to start having some building blocks, because I'm not worried about the Packers offense. They did this without Aaron Jones today. I mean, they found out before the game Aaron Jones is inactive, and they still put up points like this.
And Davante Adams, he's a special player, because he's the guy in the league that, and, you know, maybe DeAndre Hopkins is another one, that when he gets into a zone, he could just put up Madden on easy type numbers. He had a career high 196. Yardage, the most yards by a Green Bay player since Jordy Nelson went for 209 back in week 2 of 2014. And Adams was one catch shy of tying the franchise record shared by himself in week 1 of this year and Don Hutson back in 1942. So, like, when him and Rodgers are right, there is no more devastating tandem in the league. J.J. Watt spoke after the game about where the Texans are at. Let's listen to that.
Talk about the way Rodgers played today and compare it to the ways you'd seen him play earlier and when you guys played against him.
He played very well today.
What did he do that made him play well?
Threw the ball to the receivers and they caught.
If you could see the look on J.J. Watt's face, it's why I wanted to hear. Man, he had this, like, gritted teeth look. He wasn't gonna say anything. Like, he sounded like he wanted to jump through the screen and strangle John McClain, who was asking that question probably from Houston. Poor John McClain.
Well, and it's also a team that, you know, there are whispers out there that they could be heavy, very active before the trade deadline. And I think the trade deadline is not going to be a deadline this year, because to get players in with the corona business, they're saying the trades are going to happen sooner, and guys like Will Fuller have been mentioned.
Might
all
be this
sorts
week.
Of people have been mentioned.
Yeah, this week. Well, I think the deadline's not till a week from Tuesday, but yeah, you could see some stuff
in the next
this
48
week.
Hours, I think we could see trades, because it's like, if you're going to let them go, move on.
I think with Watt too, you know, they're 1-6 as they hit their bye. His brother TJ has, not that this is part of the reason he's frustrated, but kind of surpassed him perhaps as a talent in the NFL on an undefeated Steelers team. And here's J.J. Watt, a proud player, future Hall of Famer, on the other side of 30 in the middle of a mess in Houston. I can imagine it's got to be very frustrating from where he kind of saw his career arc as on a Super Bowl contender, I'm sure he thought, and now to see where they are now. Tough sitch, as they say.
As you say, really.
Okay, as I say. Let's move on.
Here we go. That's it. The money play. Let's see what the Lions dial up. 2 seconds to go. Stafford empty out of the gun. He's got it back. Looks. Pumps one. Steps up. Looks. Throws. And
yes!
Carr gets down. Detroit Lions. TJ Hawkins.
Yes!
They did it. They've tied it. They're an extra point away from winning this game. Oh, baby, how big is that?
Great
yeah, call. How big is that?
Oh, man, that might be the call of the year from Dan Miller with Lomas Brown, WJR. Yes, Maddie Stafford found TJ Hockenson in the end zone with no time on the clock, a game-tying score that set up a long after a penalty PAT by Matt Prater from 48 yards to nail down a 23-22 win. So there you go. The Lions, who lost so many games like this, win one, and for the Falcons, it's the same thing over and over. Greg, lots to unpack here, but I want to start here, actually, with the Todd Gurley touchdown that cost the Falcons the game. Yeah, you heard that right.
Everyone knew it was coming. Everyone watching that game knew that the Lions had to be thinking of allowing the Falcons to score a touchdown. The situation was about a 1:10 to go. They had just gotten inside the 10-yard line. They could have just run the clock out. The Lions were out of timeouts. And the only chance they could have for, you know, would be blocking a Younghoe Koo kick from you know, a couple yards away. Or they could have kneeled and then scored a touchdown after that, after burning some clock. And you thought, I wonder if Matt Patricia is going to think back to that Patriots Super Bowl where they, you know, they let the Giants score, whether they do it again. And I think the Falcons coaching staff told Todd Gurley, don't score a touchdown. So he breaks a tackle right at the line of scrimmage where they kind of half try to tackle him. And then they let him in, and he decides at about the 1 yard line, oh no, oh no, oh no, tries to get down on the ground, tries not to score. It was too late. He scored by mistake. It is the most Falcons thing ever that you are allowed to score. You're told not to score, and then you score by mistake, and you could have still stopped the Lions at that point. But after Gurley scored that touchdown, there was no doubt in my mind.
Oh,
I don't care that the Lions had no timeouts at all. There was no doubt in my mind they were going to go right down the field and score
it's
a touchdown.
Over.
And you do have to give Stafford and Kenny Golladay, who was a total difference maker today, credit for making some great plays in that drive, especially Golladay, which set up that game-winning touchdown. But my,
oh, what a dart.
My
what
God.
A beautiful dart to Golladay to set up the Hockenson score. Yeah, and in true Falcons fashion, Falcons zooming up the pain rankings.
Oh, my
God. The fact that when as he loses his balance and he goes down to the ground, it's like this like funhouse mirror reverse scenario of how football works, where it's like, did the ball cross the plane for the touchdown? But that's not what you want.
For all the wrong reasons.
And of course, yes, of course with the Falcons, it's going to go the wrong way for them. And just another crushing loss. I mean, maybe in the long term, honestly, Mark, this is kind of good for the Falcons, who are playing for 2021 anyway. But at the same time, for a team that's had so many stomach punch losses this year, to just add another one to the ledger in a new and unique way, you just don't need that.
Well, I wouldn't trust them to not be in the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes, no matter how that well they
could
play
be.
For 58 minutes. But look at these frisky little 3-3 Lions.
Oh, you're jumping back on because they're
can't get back on, dude.
One.
That thing left.
Yeah, and you were sinking them. I mean,
I can get on. I build my own vehicle. I'll follow the bandwagon with my own vehicle.
You know, as horrific this matchup was in terms of the uniforms and the stadium lighting, which I know Chris Wessling got a lot of tweets at him, and he was retweeting them, and you know, it was an all-time bad-looking game. It was, you know, it was a very evenly played, you know, good football contest. Matt Ryan and Julio Jones played well. It was like very even, very tense, but to end that way was just the most Falcons thing.
And they have mentioned that any sort of trade rumors around Ryan and Julio Jones, I mean, I guess you get blown away, are simply wind at this point, that they're not moving them this season.
I noticed that, I guess it was whenever their previous home game was. And that's a beautiful building, Mercedes-Benz Stadium. We were there for the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, and it was kind of the first of its kind, having the in-the-round visual scoreboard that's now going to be the rage everywhere, and we see it in the new Hollywood Park facility here. But there's something off about the turf, the coloring of the turf, and the lighting in the stadium that just kind of everything feels muted and a little bit depressing. That feels like a fairly easy fix. Falcons have so many things they need to fix. That feels like something that can be handled pretty quickly, maybe even during a bye week or something. Mark, I'm picturing you like on like a donkey, or like, you know, you're on your like burro and you're You're trying to catch up to the sputtering Lions bandwagon so you could do like an Indiana Jones, do the whip and pull yourself on it. But you're struggling to catch up with the burrow. You can do it, maybe.
I mean, you're putting me on a farm animal. I'm not. I said I built
a
vehicle.
Enjoy it.
It's not going to be an animal.
If this game doesn't convince you they're going to, you know, roar to the playoffs, what will?
I just said they're frisky, and they are. They're suddenly they're back in the conversation, sitting at 500. A lot of season left, Greg and Dan.
Ew.
Moving on.
Here's the snap on 2nd and 22, and this pass is
intercepted.
Jerry Hughes has the ball, and he goes down. He gets a late hit, but Jerry Hughes comes up with a pick somehow.
What a call. Listen, the Bills hit 6 field goals for their scoring. Not a lot to choose from in this one. Yes, the Bills' losing streak is over because their defense finally took a game over. Buffalo's D held Sam Darnold and the Jets to 4 total yards on 16 plays from scrimmage in the second half, allowing the Bills' offense to dig out of an early double-digit deficit and an eventual 18-10 win. Darnold was sacked 5 times and threw 2 picks, including the game sealer, a deflection corralled by Jerry Hughes late in the fourth quarter. Jerry Hughes was awesome in this game. He played like a man possessed, had 2 sacks, tackles for loss, the interception, just around the ball all game. And a strange game because we talked about it on the preview show that this was an obvious get right game for the Bills. You kind of imagine this could have been a 34-7, you know, 42-6 type game, and they get right. Well, that wasn't the way things started out. They fall down 10-0 in the second quarter. Josh Allen has a fumble deep in Jets territory that he loses. He is showing some accuracy issues again, and you're wondering what's going on here. But they are able to get back in the game because the Jets offense with Darnold struggling in the first game for Dow Loggins, who took over play calling duties from Adam Gase, which I guess is just Gase in total desperation mode at this point, just trying to do anything to spark matters. But it didn't work, and Josh Allen couldn't get Buffalo into the end zone. But they also didn't punt, as far as I can recall. They settled for 8 field goal attempts, hitting 6 of them, and that accounted for all the scoring. So not... you guys did not miss a golden game here, but the Bills will take it, and they get back on the winning side of things, and they're 5-2.
How are you on Darnold's return? Because, you know, early, he made some big throws, which I saw, and then you look at it, and in the second half, the Jets had 4 yards, which I don't know if I've ever seen that, 4 yards as a team in
Very
the second
bad.
Half.
On 16 plays, it was just basically a 3-and-out machine. And, you know, the way, and I tweeted about it this week, so, like, if you're trying to figure out what do you want out of this Jets season at this point, it's like, all right, 10 games, let's see what Sam Darnold has, because you're kind of like, as Mark alluded to on our preview show, in a bit of a catch-22 situation where, like, you don't want to give up on Sam Darnold because you have a lot invested in him and you've seen the flashes. But at the same time, like, he needs to improve and really make it a tough decision for the Jets if they do indeed end up having perhaps the number one overall pick. And this game, to me, was like a huge red flag because the Bills' defense hasn't been any good this year. Hmm. And the Jets didn't have Jameson Crowder, which is a huge loss for that offense because he basically is the offense for most of the season. But they did have Perryman back, and they got Denzel Mims back. And early on, they did have a bit of a connection. But the fact that you face planted in the second half, you're just going to make the decision easier for the Jets if you have a couple more of these performances. So yeah, I was disappointed by his play.
I mean, I guess if you can't kill Jets fans if a couple months from now, if the season plays out as it has. To switch loyalties, because a Jets fan's job has been an awful job, but you're not sitting there just to not enjoy life. So a ton of changes coming. I did see DJ.
You mean switch loyalties in terms of quarterbacks, not in terms of teams? Because I wouldn't blame him for switching teams. I mean, life's too short.
I don't know too many Jets fans that would do that, or any, to be honest.
Just saying.
I think they're a very loyal fan base.
I wouldn't blame them.
But I saw Daniel Jeremiah tweet that their Jets rookie class... he was gushing about how promising it was. I'm assuming that's because Mims came in and made some plays.
I don't know. Mims got out of the game healthy, made some catches, and that's, you know, you get excited about that. And Mekhi Becton came back, and he looks like a potential all-pro level left tackle, which is a huge hit. But, yeah, I mean, DJ was happy to see a positive tweet about the Jets for once because you don't see many of them. But, yeah, Darnold is up to about 30 starts now. And you can't just continue to hope that he's going to kind of pull it together at a certain point. Especially, it did cross my mind during this very ugly second half. You know, Joe Burrow lighting up the Browns, and he's been lighting up teams all year. Justin Herbert, what he's been able to do. You know what? That's what you expect at some point, and you just haven't seen it from Darnold. And even though he's been in a horrible situation, you got to have results at some point. Well, so that's where I'm at on. I'm starting to kind of mentally begin my break from Sam Darnold and mentally preparing for the idea of hitting the reboot.
Well, it's competitive. Although the Jets, you know, look as bad as, you know, any team, certainly, there are 7 teams with 1 win or less.
Right.
There's a lot of bad teams this year.
What a battle.
There's a lot of jostling.
1 3-game win streak, you're
7 teams right now. It's week 7 right now, and there's 7 teams with 1 win or less.
Take a look at the Jets' upcoming schedule and tell me where you see the 3-game winning streak.
You're lucky because their schedule's brutal. But
Patriots are about as winnable a game as they got.
all right, let's move on. Another team in the tank for Trevor sweepstakes.
Play action, steps back, now throwing deep down the left sideline. That's Terry McLaurin, wide open, pitch, catch, touchdown! Touchdown, Washington!
You are not going to double-guess that one.
Bram Weinstein and Julie Donaldson, WTEM. Good to hear the female perspective in the calls. You don't get much of that. Might be the only one, right? Scary Terry McLaurin and Kyle Allen hooked up on a 52-yard touchdown. And the Washington football team coasted to a 25-3 win over the moribund Dallas Cowboys. I mean, a team that could be headed toward major changes in the near future. Greg, the Cowboys really are this bad, huh?
They are. It was unfortunate to see Andy Dalton go out with a concussion after a dirty hit by John Bostic. I don't know if it was intentional, but it was a late hit on a slide, and he got kicked out of the game, and he'll probably be suspended. But I don't think that should distract from how thorough a total beatdown the game already was before that. I think you could have had Andy Dalton out there for 12 drives, and I don't think they were going to score a touchdown with him. Or who was their quarterback? Ben DiNucci.
I don't even want to disparage.
Wake up,
Ben DiNucci. I know, you gotta go in the game.
This guy's a professional, and look, he actually made one good throw in his limited time. But wow, they were overmatched on both sides of the ball. Just totally overmatched. Forget Washington being in the mix for Trevor. Their defense is too good, I think. They're going to win too many games, and their offense is better with Kyle Allen. I do think it was a smart move to go to Kyle Allen. I thought so at the time, too, and I think he's not great, but they're better.
I mean, we liked Kyle Allen for games last year, and then, you know, the floor fell out. Antonio Gibson, 128 yards on the ground. I think you're right, Greg. They're a little too frisky. They're a little too talented on defense to be in that race. This is the Cowboys to me this season. Mike McCarthy answering questions after the game about the Dalton hit from Bostic and acknowledging that one of the things that threw him that
Hang
he found
on, Mark.
Concerning.
I have that. Let's listen.
Let's
to
hear it.
It.
We speak all the time about playing for one another, you know, protecting one another. So. It definitely was probably not the response that you would expect.
Yeah, that, you know, when your quarterback goes down, you want everyone around him, and that was done with Dak Prescott, obviously. But
people getting after Boston.
I mean, that's what he's saying. It's rally around your quarterback and show Washington that you're not taking that, and instead this lifeless roster, which has had a complete disconnect, A, with the coaching staff, and B, with anyone observing the Dallas Cowboys this season, did nothing. And I think that speaks to me about a lot of the criticism that you started to hear about the player-coach relationships and everything going on weeks ago that had you concerned, but you saw all the talent. And now it's just like, talent is fine. Every team has talent. They're not playing up in any level to where they are. And I don't know how you come out of this season if you're Jerry Jones, if things stay apace, with a vote of confidence in Mike McCarthy. It's one and done. And you know what? The rest of the league moves on with this is as bad of a coaching job as I've ever seen.
I think that is well within the range of outcomes if this continues. And especially, who knows with Dalton? I mean, he was diagnosed with a concussion. It was a nasty hit. You know, these guys can come back 5 days later from concussions. It's just the way the sport is. Or sometimes, depending on the severity, could disappear for the rest of the year. So we don't know his status right now. But the fact that he's come out and looks so helpless puts this team into a really dark place now, where if he can't play, and Benny DiNucci, who we like his name, but he's a seventh round pick, so you're not expecting a lot from him. This thing could really crater. And again, you have a aging results, wants results now level owner. And I would even put a sandwich wager out there that this could end up with McCarthy being sent out of town.
And I don't think I'd take you on it because I think that's the outcome.
You want to do it? Let's do
it. I'll do it. It's not a crazy sandwich to put up there. I think there's cases for both sides. I don't know if Jerry Jones is going to want to admit he's wrong that quickly. It's going to be slow water torture, though, for this season because of how bad the NFC East is. They're going to have to, not give up. It's the games are going to keep mattering as they keep playing this bad. And I thought, when I, heard about the, Dalton not getting near him, I thought about, well, how many of these guys know each other that well? It's like an offensive line of just total replacements. I'm not saying that justifies it. I'm just trying to tell you these aren't even the Cowboys. It was only one starter left from the offensive line as before. Andy Dalton's not there. I just want to throw this out before he goes. By the way, I think Scott Turner's doing a good job as their coordinator, considering how little talent there is. And that, I think, shows how poor Dallas is coaching. The Washington football team had 252 yards at halftime. Washington, they had their season high in running for the year at halftime, 125 yards against this Cowboys D. And they're pretty healthy on the Cowboys D. So, let's not forget about that Cowboys D. Wow.
I don't think I should have locked up the Cowboys this week.
Oh, my God.
Hey, Erica, are you there, by the way?
Did we lose her again? I think.
Hi.
No, this is a periodic welfare check. Yep. If you're just joining
Eddie
the podcast.
Eddie Spaghetti is here now. He came running, and Jada.
He's a hunk of beef.
Yeah, so Eddie was just outside checking the perimeter.
I like it. Eddie brought in
you went in the apartment.
Now you got Staten Island in the house.
The siren on the door says the gas is temporarily turned on.
Full investigation.
Eddie's on the case.
I'm glad that Eddie's in the building because that's a guy that I would trust.
Well, there's nothing else in there.
Nothing else in that apartment.
All right, good. I just also want to make sure you're not wandering around the city handing drifters stun guns and lead pipes after what we saw earlier with the butcher knife being handed to the stranger at your
Yeah, door. No, I'm very, very properly scared. So Eddie and Jada.
I would also say if there's nothing in the apartment, he sounds like he maybe just moved in and he ordered a pizza because he has no groceries, and so maybe it's legit and he's a very nice person that needed a knife from you.
Yeah.
Let's get Shook over there. That's, Eddie's a nice piece of meat over there for protection, but let's welcome in Nick Shook. Erica in a little bit of danger potentially. We're keeping an eye on it, Nick, but we're going to send you over if we feel it to be necessary.
Look, I don't go to the gym 5 days a week for no reason.
what a piece of meat himself. All right. Shook is with us to continue with the highlights. And here's a shootout, a fun game down at the Superdome.
Joey Sly will attempt an NFL record 65-yard field goal. The kick's away. It is getting dangerously close and just short.
Mmm. Mmm, 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 mmm. Zach Streif with the call for WWL. 65 yards. Dead red down the middle, but fell about 2 yards short of the crossbar. It was that close to NFL history. But it didn't work out for the Panthers and Joey Sly and Matt Rhule, who fall to 27-24 to the Saints. Drew Brees completed passes to 8 different pass catchers, threw for 287 and 2 touchdowns, and added another score on the ground. That's 3 straight wins for the Saints. Shook, let's give New Orleans some credit here. They are shorthanded on offense, and they're still getting it done.
Yeah, no Michael Thomas, and yet Drew Brees really spread the ball around really well.
Or Manny Sanders.
Yeah, yeah. Deontay Harris had his first career touchdown catch today. He went to a number of different receivers. Alvin Kamara doing it again, of course, over 100 all-purpose yards for the seventh straight game, which is the longest active streak in the NFL. I mean, you know, this is the offense, even without the guys that we knew, you know, the names aren't there, but this is still the offense that we expected from the Saints. And yeah, they only won by 3 points, but it was enough of a back and forth affair where when you stepped away from it afterward, you're like, that was a quality win. I mean, the Panthers, you know, they're not a team that we expected much from, but they're pretty competitive, and it was a competitive game today. So it still is a good win for the Saints.
Well, it's also a game you look at, you know, the yardage, and the game's close, but the yardage isn't. The Saints move the ball a lot better. And that goes to, I think, the Panthers overachieving. But the Saints are pretty deep, even though they're injured. And we get to Michael Thomas because I do want to talk about Michael Thomas. But they're pretty injured in various parts. But their lines are getting healthy. And, like, they're deep along those lines. And Marcus Davenport, who's back and healthy, had a huge sack to back up that Joey Sly field goal. And that, to me, like, that's a huge moment in that game.
Yeah, I mean, there was only 2 sacks the entire game, and that was the biggest defensive play, I think, of the entire game. The other one was Brian Burns forcing a fumble near the end of the first half, which led to a touchdown. And the Panthers, I mean, they took a 17-14 lead in the second quarter and looked like, oh, they might pull this off. And it was close throughout the game, but you're right. The Saints, you know, outgained them, and it was really the Panthers finding a way to remain in the game late. And, you know, that sack kind of put him in a position where you already knew that was going to be the outcome. You're like, are they really going to do it? Is this really going to happen? But I will say, I'll give Joey Sly this. If Teddy Bridgewater doesn't take that sack, that's a tie game, and they're probably going to overtime. Because that field goal from 65 missed by about 2 feet.
And this is a guy that was on the Corona list a few days ago.
Yeah, that's the start of the week.
Greg, I think you deserve credit for standing by Teddy Bridgewater during this offseason ramp up to the season. They moved the ball and they could put up big plays. Robbie Anderson and DJ Moore are now the only teammate duo in the NFL with 500 plus receiving yards through week 7 entering Sunday Night Football. This is not a dink and dunk. The average air yards per attempt myth around Teddy Bridgewater has been proven false. Listen, they're now 3-2 in 5 games without Christian McCaffrey. I believe they're playing Thursday night, and they're expected to potentially get McCaffrey back. He has not played since week 2. So, I mean, you're signing up. You're signing up for 3-4 probably if you're Matt Rhule, even though you're disappointed tonight.
I got sandwiches on Teddy having more yards than Josh Allen, which I would have thought with Teddy's in like the top 7 or 8 in passing yards, he'd be in good shape, but he is trailing, but he's in that mix. I do think we should mention how weird this Michael Thomas thing is. I don't know what's going on here. Dude, he was supposed to be back like 3 or 4 weeks ago. Dude gets in a fight and gets suspended before the bye week. Everyone thought he was going to play the week before. Then there's like rumblings. He returns to practice that he might get traded. Then there's Sean Payton going after someone on Twitter saying that's a bunch of nonsense. And I have found over the years when there's weird things coming out of New Orleans, it's for a reason. And usually when Sean Payton is going out of his way to deny things, usually it's the Saints that are putting out that story in the first place. Like something's weird here.
You know, wide receivers are so tough sometimes because they're so volatile at times, personality wise. And it seems to me with the smoke that's coming out of there is that this guy is causing issues behind the scenes. And
are you not buying the latest hamstring tweak then?
No,
I don't know.
He could be banged up, but Mike Florio reported on NBC tonight, what you were just saying, Greg, that they kind of potentially were floating Thomas before the trade deadline. And now this injury kind of has thrown cold water on that. And I mean, this guy set the all-time catch record last year. This guy had been the most productive wide receiver since Antonio Brown. Oh, yeah. Antonio Brown, another all-world talent that's personality and off the field issues torpedoed his career until recently now. I mean, it is very interesting to see how this plays out. And it is weird that the injury stuff wrapped around the punch.
I mean, they're also still like sneaky 2 months away from probably Drew Brees walking away and becoming the Notre Dame announcer and looking themselves at least on offense in a pretty deep rebuild.
I mean, he was healthy enough to be practicing to get into a fight with the I don't know. You know what I mean? And that was like 3 weeks ago. So it's
just, yeah. But Mark, does that speak to you think Michael Thomas couldn't handle the struggles of a rebuild? Or is it the fact that because like that guy, a guy at that age that who's that good of a receiver, you would want that to be one of your key pieces. Unless
I think you would too. I mean, I'd be surprised if they trade him. But when you throw in the fact that he's punching teammates, and that's the part of the story that we know, there might be the experience of Michael Thomas becoming a little bit too much for everyone.
If there was ever a player that were to unfollow his team on Twitter and Instagram after an 0-2 start with a new quarterback that's struggling in 2021, it is Michael Thomas. Maybe they're trying to get ahead of this, the unfollow.
Yeah, that's a good call.
All right, let's move on. There was a false alarm unfollowing on Twitter and Instagram today of Harrison Smith and the Vikings. I want everyone to know that it was out there that Harrison Smith had unfollowed the Vikings on his social, but it then was later learned via reporting that he, in fact, had never followed the Vikings in the first place. So everyone stand down. Dumb. Harrison Smith is not on his way out of Minnesota. Now we move on. Got to get that out there, Greg.
Comes, throws right sideline for Guyton. Caught right sideline. 25, 20, 10. Guyton to the end zone. Touchdown, Chargers. Herbert to Guyton. 70 yards.
Just too much speed.
Matt Money Smith.
Daniel Jeremiah.
With a call, KYSR. Man, Money's got a, and DJ have a front row seat for something special here. Justin Herbert is a man on fire. The super rookie went off with another big passing game. Also set a Chargers rushing record for quarterbacks. Four touchdowns, including that game winner to Jalen Guyton. 39-29 win over the Jags at Hollywood Park. Herbert finally gets that elusive first win, but we all know he's played well enough to win a bunch of games already. Shook, this kid looks like an instant star. This is a huge story in the league.
You know, I was really startled. I mean, we follow the league from week to week, obviously, but I was just startled for a moment when I was watching the end of the game today and heard the broadcast say, and Justin Herbert officially has his first career win, because you think he's been playing well for a month. Like, that type of performance from a quarterback usually leads to victories, and yet the Chargers have found ways to lose and have, you know, had some close calls. So I was like, wow, that really is his first career win. But it's the first of many. I mean, at this point, some of the passes that he threw today were just absolute dimes, and he seems to be getting better with more experience week by week. It's kind of in the mold of Joe Burrow, but Burrow looked better from the start, I think, or has been – I don't know if they started, he was here and he keeps going up. But they're both improving on a weekly basis. And it's really exciting to watch. And especially for a Chargers team that, I mean, when we entered this season, we didn't know what they were getting out of him. They kind of took Justin Herbert because he was the guy after Tua, and they had Tyrod as the bridge quarterback, and you didn't know when Herbert was going to see the field at all. There was some thought that he wouldn't see the field at all this season, and yet he comes out and he's playing like a stud. So it's really exciting.
The thing that is interesting to me is, like, you watch his touchdown run, which was, I mean, his arm set up that run because they didn't know what to do with him. And it's like, okay, I mean, from a team planning angle, they wanted Tyrod Taylor to redshirt this season for Herbert, because also he's an Anthony Lynn favorite because he's a mobile scrambler and fun on the ground. It's like, sorry, Justin Herbert can do basically anything on the ground that Tyrod Taylor today is going to do for you. And he can do a billion more things through the air. I just wonder how they scouted him beforehand. I mean, to the eye, he is a complete wonder.
Well, you got to play. You can't know until they're in the games, I feel like.
Yeah, we say that, but when coaches say, like, we love this guy in practice, like, that's why Colin Kaepernick is replacing Alex Smith. It's like, oh, well, coaches are with him all week long. So it's kind of like you could bend it any way you want. I mean,
well, you think they struggled to evaluate just how awkward is it for Daniel Jeremiah having to call these games? I'm sure he's like interviewing with Justin Herbert and he has to be like, oh, sorry, bro. I had you ranked 20th in my top 50 rankings behind Andrew Thomas, struggling weekly, behind Kenneth Murray, and I don't think so.
So in your world, DJ behind is bringing that up in conversation.
Herbert knows. I mean,
DJ just stewing during the color analyst.
He's a great that pays attention. Behind Ross Blacklock, I don't even know if he won in the first two rounds. Graded behind all those guys, and here's one of the greatest quarterbacks as a rookie we've ever seen.
What a hit piece by Rosenthal there. Yeah, I condone it.
That was fun.
Anything else on this game, Shook, other than the Herbert mastery?
Well, on the Herbert point, I think the one thing that has helped him so far is he's doing a lot of the things that he did well at Oregon, including running. I mean, anybody remembers that Rose Bowl win that he closed his Oregon career with? I mean, that's a prime example of basically what has helped him through the first, you know, 5 weeks that he's played football in the NFL. So, I think you're right on not figuring out where these guys are headed, but at the same time, they get out there and just kind of do what they know. Jacksonville-wise, there was some rumbling about Gardner Minshew, right? Is he going to lose his job? He was okay. I mean, he had a couple touchdown passes today, 173 yards. He kept him in the game, but then it was the same Gardner Minshew outcome at the end. 4th and 2, he gets the conversion. 4th and 8, he misses an open DJ Shark by 5 yards, and that was basically the ball game. So your ceiling is low. Sure, it's exciting from time to time, but these Jaguars, we know they're not really going anywhere.
They're going
to
play Mike Glennon?
What is going on? No,
how is a head coach today floating that story out there to our reporters, saying that we've made a decision that Mike Glennon will give us a better chance?
When they're down the coaches,
when they're down 39-29, and they need, you know, points. When he's trying to push the ball downfield, you could see the frustration on the receivers on the two misses he had there. You know, I think he's just a limited guy when you have to open it up a little bit. But they're certainly in the tank for Trevor sweepstakes at 1-6 now, off 6 straight losses. Now, Sunday Night Football.
In a 69-minute and 45-second game, it is the only time that Arizona's had the lead.
Al Michaels with the call for NBC. Zane Gonzalez atones for his error at the end of regulation when he shanked a 41-yarder, hitting the 48-yarder in OT. Arizona Cardinals 37, Seattle Seahawks 34 in a thriller. The Cardinals improved to 5-2. The Seahawks finally lose their first game of the year. They fall to 5-1. Shook, this one was wild. The Seahawks seemed to have it in hand. They were up 34-24 with less than 6 minutes to play. They are unable to close the game out on defense. No surprise there. And then unable to take advantage of their opportunities when Russell Wilson was on the field.
Yeah, it felt like once the scramble to get it to 2nd and short at the 2-minute warning, it was basically like, well, you know, they get this first down and it's all but over. And then, you know, Arizona gets the stop and suddenly you have a ball game. But even at that point, the Cardinals still had to go down the field. I mean, it was such an unlikely. And I haven't looked at the probability metric for next gen in this game, but I'm sure it just shot down because like, This was unlikely. This was definitely unlikely, but I mean, it speaks to the moxie and the ability of a young guy like Kyler Murray to be able to lead it, and also to Larry Fitzgerald for getting the ball to the center in order for them to snap in time.
So people love that.
Various
people love that.
Yeah, that, yeah.
I mean, more a little unlikely. It was insane. How did the Seahawks blew this game 1,000 different ways? The Cardinals, you know, tried to in overtime a couple different times too, but there were so many parts of this game that were absolutely insane. It reminds me of the inverse of that 6-6 Cardinals Seahawks game, which happened when I was in London and you guys weren't. And I remember it ended at like 5 a.m. and there was a debate all year. Was that like the worst game of the year or the best game? And like this one tonight, it was sloppy as hell, but it was the best game of the year. And I go back to that overtime period or what set it up rather. And the decision from Pete Carroll, and you mentioned, Nick Shook, that Russell Wilson scrambled to set up a 2nd and short where all they need is 2 yards to finish off the game. And the first run loses yardage. And I remember thinking like, are they going to have the guts to throw the ball here? Cause if they throw the ball here, they're going to win the game. And I don't kill them for running it there, but you went run in that spot. You went backwards in the end. It was like the only time all year where they didn't have the guts. And Kyler Murray, directs one of the craziest, late minute regulation drives I've ever seen. 54 seconds where they had 2 designed runs. They spiked it 3 different times. You never seen something like that. And it was really like courageous and smart. And then Cliff Kingsbury did as much as he could in overtime to make us think they're not necessarily courageous and smart.
Well, or in regulation, because I mean, you know, had that gone down poorly for the Cardinals, you've got the talking point that Zane Gonzalez kicked the would-be game-winning but would-be not game-winning field goal on second down, which, I mean, it's amazing that what you – with especially with the kickers, like the last thing they do is all we remember, and it wipes out all these other storylines. But I will say – I will footnote this by saying that I thought that one of the biggest things that Arizona did in regulation – in the overtime period was getting to Russell Wilson. That Byron Murphy sack was huge. I mean, coming off a regulation period that saw them – you know, combined for 982 yards. The minute this game, the minute that the Bucs Raiders was moved out of this slot and Arizona, Seattle got moved in, we've been through this enough. A mental note rolled through my mind that said, you will be up at least an extra hour and 20 minutes than you would have been up.
Cliff Kingsbury, I'm sure they'll have a victory Monday. On Tuesday morning at the team meeting, he should have Rolex watches for everyone on the Arizona defense for bailing his ass out on this game. Because, yeah, I could not get over it. And I couldn't believe Al and Chris, who are usually so locked in on things, didn't even make any note of it, that he settled for the 41-yard field goal
on second down.
Right.
After a 5-yard loss. It was a reminder that head coaches can lose their nerve, too. A really big spot. And I think that's what happened. I think that's what happened here. They lost five on a run and he just said, okay, send Zane out there.
He lost his mind.
What he really failed to realize is that the Seattle defense was gassed. Even Collinsworth was making note of it, that these guys were done and all you had to do is run it. You're probably the dam was going to break either for a game ending touchdown or for another 5, 10, 15 yards. Instead, he brings out Gonzalez and he misses the kick. But yeah, I was really surprised. So good job by the Arizona defense for, like Mark said, getting to Wilson in overtime and at the end of regulation. And in general, Seattle's offense, which has been so unstoppable, they end the game going punt, punt, interception. That was not expected either.
And the interception was crazy. Like, they didn't really discuss that either because Isaiah Simmons, a top 10 pick who's barely played this year, he played under 5 snaps tonight, and one of those snaps was that interception because Arizona was so injured by then. Russell Wilson just threw that to no one. There was no receivers anywhere remotely near. The pressure was coming, and they had blitzed him. And Vance Joseph, give him some credit for coming up with these crazy blitzes in overtime. They just cooked him up. Russ was cooked. Like, he lost his mind a little bit. I wrote down, I don't want to go on too long, but this game was so insane. I just, like, wrote down, I was starting to, like, you know, write down, like, a top 5 plays from this game because this game was so incredible. And then it got longer and longer. Here are the things that in no order, but here are things that happened in this game. Kyler Murray being cool enough to smile when he sees Hopkins one-on-one and then throw a touchdown to him. The 3 Russell Wilson throws to Lockett were all insane. The one-hander to start the game was one of the best catches of the year. The bomb touchdown was ridiculous. And the touchdown on 4th down to Lockett was just like that 2-point conversion in the NFC Championship. That alone was amazing. The Kyler Murray scramble touchdown where he just, you know, juked them out of their shorts was outrageous. The Kyler drive we mentioned to force overtime. Kingsbury's brain fart. Simmons's interception. And then almost the biggest thing was I thought the Seahawks won on a game-winning touchdown in overtime. Right. That was overturned by a penalty. What an insane game.
And you didn't even mention the Benson Maioa unsportsmanlike conduct that took the field goal off the board and allowed Arizona to get the touchdown instead that then set up the game-tying field goal at the end of regulation. I mean, that's Seattle has been dancing with the devil all season, I think, with their defense. And they've gotten away with it a couple games. It finally came back to haunt them, too. I think that's something to take out of this game as well, that they're going to remain vulnerable, even with a great Russell Wilson, as long as this defense cannot make stands.
Yeah, you know, the Benson Maioa thing is huge because we could point scapegoats out of a bunch of different people here. I mean, we could go to Brian Schottenheimer for calling. Not only did they go run, and you're fine with that, Greg, and I was fine with that, too. They called the same play 3 times. It was a stretch run to the right. 3 times. You think the third time they might actually anticipate a little bit and try to shoot the gap, which is exactly what they did, stuffing him in the hole. I mean, Carlos Hyde's not a guy who necessarily gets stuffed like that. They knew that was coming. And so you could point him as a scapegoat. It could be Maioa as a scapegoat. It could go down the line. But I think the one thing that really stands out to me about this entire game is centers on Kyler Murray, and it centers on the fact that he's been doing this, like scrambling for the touchdown, for example. It's almost a near weekly thing now. I mean, this is something that he's, I don't know if you would say added to his arsenal or whatever, but it's something that's helping their offense reach that next level. But what we haven't seen him do is do it in a position like tonight, where he had to go down the field, where he had to lead a drive like that, and they had to execute on every single play and yep. found a way to. And I don't know if this is really a turning point for them, but it's really encouraging because we had some high hopes for them. They kind of, you know, they hit a lull early in the season. They're coming on strong now, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, we called it a doorway game on Thursday, and I that's my word for it, because Nick, I thought the same thing about Cleveland facing like Pittsburgh. Like, you go through that doorway, you show that you can get through, then we think about you differently. And I think about that, you know, I know that they beat Seattle last year. But that's last year. I mean, this after a 2 or 3 week sort of semi funk where I wasn't sure what to think about Arizona's offense, I come out of this completely different. I thought this game also was a study in variance, because how different football games can be. Like, we talked about the Carolina New Orleans game had 14 possessions, 7 each. That's kind of unusual. This had 25 possessions. I mean, wow. And it looked like it, to the point where if you were one, the lost soul being asked to write the what we learned for this, I would have like literally run out of the building at this point, because I don't do well with those things. And there was like 75 different plot points, please.
That's a shout out to Grant Gordon, who's writing this.
Thank you, Grant
Gordon, one of the great guys on the desk at NFL.com. Yeah, there's only a handful of special quarterbacks in the league, and we got to see two of them tonight. Just a wild game. All right. That's Week 7, Sunday. Look at us. Look at us. Almost mid-season now. We're flying along. Coming up this week on the Around the NFL podcast, we're going to dive deep with the trade deadline coming up. Tuesday show, we'll have our preview for Week 8, of course, and then the NFL Network program, which you should DVR or watch live Saturday mornings every week. So check that out. Shook, thank you as always.
Yep.
And now we're all going, including Shook, who's it's very late in downtown Cleveland, but he's going to hop on a red eye, and we're all going to go straight to Ricky Hollywood's apartment to protect her. So we're just getting started tonight. Ricky, we're coming for you, baby.
Yeah, for a little update, the person does not live there. Texted the landlord. The cops have been here. It's been quite the Sunday night escapade.
We're going to form a human wall. That's why I'm coming out. I'm going to be in the middle or on the edge. No, me and Dan will be in the edge. Greg and Mark in the middle. Yeah. And,
we're in the middle?
What we'll do.
Guy is a knife. Why am I in the middle of the wall?
I'm just going to yell at them, like annoy them until they leave.
Our shields will be frozen. Our shields will be frozen pizzas.
Nice.
All right, Ricky. Stay safe in all seriousness. All right. This is Dan Hansa signing off for... I asked the listeners to come up with a nickname for Nick Shook. I'm going to debut it next Sunday night. So just stay tuned on that one. So Stan Hansa signing off for the unshakable Nick Shook, the Quiet Storm, the Old Boss, and Ricky Hollywood in West Hollywood. Stay safe.
R.I.P.
Until Tuesday. Don't spit in the scoy.